Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Phil.
And this is The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals and the official podcast partner of Glee 2024.
In this special collection of episodes, we'll be sharing over 20 interviews that we recorded live from our podcast booth at Glee this year, offering fresh insights from the innovators and trailblazers that keep the garden sector growing.
So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
In today's bumper edition of the pod, we're talking with three female leaders whose brands have distinct but captivating stories. Later in the show, we'll be speaking to Jennifer Susan, the founder and inventor of Halisphere, as well as Shona Young, CEO of Nutseen Twine. But before we get to those, we hope you enjoy our conversation with Rachel Ewenson, the founder of Feverfew Garden Company.
So I'm delighted to welcome to The Underground today, Rachel Ewenson. Just checking that's right, yes. And Rachel is the managing director or the CEO founder of Feverfew Garden Company, which is specifically you make workwear for women. Is that right?
That is right. Thank you so much for having
me. Yes, welcome.
I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, lovely. So I tell you what, let's just start with you giving us a bit of background about yourself and is the world of horticulture, is it a new world for you? Just tell us a bit about who you are.
It is, yes. Yeah, so it's all new. So I actually only started getting into gardening back during COVID.
Okay.
As I think most of the UK did.
Absolutely.
During that time.
Nothing wrong with that.
So my basic story is that I grew up in the Orkney Islands. I live there now still. But as soon as I finished school, I just wanted to go traveling, as most young people that grow up in small communities do.
Yes.
So I left for Australia and I spent about 2.5 years traveling around there with
amazing.
No plans to come home whatsoever until March 2020, when obviously everything got shut down.
Yeah.
And I found myself on a flight back to Orkney. So with not much else to do during lockdown, me and my sister, who is also traveling in Australia with me, we both decided that we were going to try and resurrect our old vegetable patch that was just at our family home.
Yeah.
It was totally overgrown. It had, you know, willows growing in the middle of it, and it hadn't been touched for about a decade. So we decided we were gonna try and bring it back to life, and we dug the whole thing by hand. Spent about six weeks working on it, and planted the whole thing up. And that was when I kind of fell in love with gardening and just had a whole new appreciation for like self-sufficiency.
Right.
I've been living in a city in Australia for years, you know, living in Melbourne, and I enjoy the city life. But you know, when lockdown came in, I think it gives you a different perspective. You know, when you're walking down the supermarket aisles and you can see that they're empty.
Yeah.
That was definitely, I suppose, making me want to just try growing my own food, and looking more at like local food growing, and sort of local, those kind of local communities. I got into gardening during lockdown, and then because it was a new hobby, I wanted to treat myself to a nice pair of gardening gloves.
Absolutely.
You know, when you were starting a new hobby, you want to kind of treat yourself and buy all the things that you need to get yourself started. But I kept taking trips to the garden center, and I couldn't actually find anything that I liked.
Right.
I found that gloves for women were generally like less functional, less durable.
Yes,
they were pink and frilly. There was even one company that they did men's and women's gloves, and they were much the same, but the women's were like pink. I wanted the men's gloves, you know.
Yeah.
I just want something neutral,
functional.
But that still looked nice. And so with every sort of failed trip to the garden center, I just kept thinking about it more and more. And about a year passed of me kind of thinking about this. I just couldn't find any gloves I liked.
Really? And, it was that bad?
Yeah. Well, okay. I was just wearing kind of old tatty gloves because I couldn't find what I wanted to buy.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then I started to kind of look at the women's workwear market as a whole, and I did find that there is a real big gap there. As you'll know, it is really hard to find workwear for women that fits properly and actually is functional. A lot of things you'll find are unisex, and they just don't fit.
They don't fit.
I'm tiny. Just 5'3" and I've got really small hands, and so it's really hard for me to find anything that fits.
I'm the same as you, size 3, tiny hands. Nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. So after a year of kind of sitting on the idea, I decided to try and give it a go myself. myself of just solving the problem.
Wow.
I had no experience whatsoever in product design like this. Okay. At the time, I was working as a freelance photographer. So I at least had that kind of experience of photography and branding. Sort of thing. So, I had no idea what a tech pack was. You need to bring a technical pack to a manufacturer. I didn't know what that was. I had to find a designer that could help me make one. And I was just, sending a designer pictures of and sketches of anything I wanted. And somehow we managed to rope together a tech pack and I got it to a manufacturer. And then my first product was eventually made. It was a year of sitting on the idea and then a year of development as well.
Okay.
And then in June last year, we finally launched.
Woo-hoo.
So yeah, it was really exciting.
So could you give us a little bit of a flavour of the ethos of the company? It's Feverfew, isn't it? Feverfew Garden Company.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're very much female-focused and very much community-focused. So our mission statement is to get as many women as possible feeling more confident in the garden while also, having a positive impact on nature and our communities wherever possible.
Right.
Try to do that just by making products that women love to wear and you can feel confident in them and comfortable. And then also trying to give back wherever possible as well. Just a few months ago, we donated our first gloves to Devon Dig and Donate.
Oh, yes.
Really, really exciting.
Devon and Earth.
Yes.
Because I'm from Devon, so I know them. Yes. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so really excited. Donated our first few gloves there. And that's something I want to really do more of is try to just give back.
And
try and help out these community gardens, community projects wherever possible. So it's been really lovely to see pictures of that project coming along and I see people wearing our gloves and it's just so nice to know that they're being used. But really passionate about community gardening projects or any kind of community wild spaces. As the business develops, I want to put more back into that.
That's excellent. So you were saying that when you started during lockdown, you rejuvenated your old veg patch with your sister.
Mm-hmm.
Is she involved in the business at all?
She is. She's actually just finished her accounting degree.
Okay.
So she's not necessarily involved in the business, but she's really coming in handy.
Right.
Getting the accounts
financial
sorted.
Financial advice.
Yeah. And has she stayed on Orkney as well?
She's still in Orkney, she's just working as an accountant now. So it's very handy to have always so handy to have an account.
Oh my goodness, I know.
She's working on preparing my accounts right now as we speak. So very happy about that.
Wonderful. I would love that.
But I've been really enjoying roping in friends and family as I go along. I've got a friend helping me today and I've had another friend that's helped me at previous shows and various family members all help me as I go along. So it's really nice.
Brilliant.
So I'm extremely jealous that you live in Orkney. I'm also fairly lucky as I spent an amazing summer there. And it is stunning, but it's fairly remote. So how tricky is it to set up a company there? And what have been the logistics in getting started?
Yeah, the logistics have been an issue at times.
Yeah,
it has its positives and negatives. Obviously, I do feel so lucky to be able to live in Orkney. It's beautiful.
Yes.
And it's an amazing place. Although shipping can be an issue. Over the winter, we had a particularly bad winter. And so there was days on end where the boats weren't going, flights weren't even going.
Oh,
so it's, you're trying to explain to online customers that, sorry, nothing has left the island in the last few days.
Yeah.
So your package hasn't arrived yet.
Right.
So that's been an issue. I've had a few mishaps where I've had product launches coming and the products haven't actually arrived yet because they've been delayed so much getting up to Orkney. And it adds a lot of extra cost as well, getting things up. But there are positives. I mean, I've had a lot more support from being in a rural area. There's a lot more government-funded programs and things. I've had access to mentorship, to training. So really grateful for that as well. So you've got to sort of use it to your advantage.
Yes, absolutely.
So have you been looking into third-party logistics things elsewhere as well?
By the end of this month, I'm starting with a really lovely fulfillment company. It's family-owned. They're in Suffolk.
Okay.
So really excited about that because that's going to cut down our carbon footprint significantly because most of my customer base is in England. So it makes no sense to send everything up to Orkney. company and then back down again. As much as, I mean, I love sending out all the packages myself, and I still write a handwritten note, thank you note, in every single parcel I send out.
Yeah. Oh,
so I'm going to miss doing that. Yeah. But it does get to a point where I've written thousands now.
Yeah. That's a lot.
But I still love it. I like taking the time to just write a personal thank you to everyone that has bought from us, because it just means so much. So, I'm really excited to start working with them. We're a lovely, lovely family-owned company.
That's a lovely thing that you writing those personal notes. It really makes that connection between you and your customer, doesn't it?
I always try to think about just trying to do things differently and trying to have a personal touch, because it's just, I mean, how often do you get a personal handwritten note? Because most people buy things from Amazon nowadays, and it just feels so impersonal. It's very rare that you would ever get anything like this, and it means so much when you do. You really notice and it's just that community building. I really want anyone that buys from me to feel like they're part of the community.
But I tell you what, touching on that, and we have talked about a bit about the size of your feet and the size of your hands, and finding, you know, gloves to buy really, really difficult. So I've been part of a campaign led by a previous podcast guest, Charlotte Howard, looking into, you know, campaigning for decent workwear for women. How have you found the kind of industry's reaction, and especially from women, to your brand?
Amazing and I'm in the group Women in Gardening Network as well, run by Charlotte, and they've been so fantastic. So when I actually initially first had the idea for the business, I went straight into the group and I asked, what do you love and hate about your current gardening gloves? Because I thought, this is
I remember
perfect
that word. Yes, I answered it.
Oh, amazing. Well, yeah, I know that's right ahead of me. You know, I had all the research I needed.
What a great focus group.
And a lot of them don't hold back either.
Well, exactly. I knew I would get an honest response. They've been fantastic. There's a lot of people in that group that have supported me from the beginning and that are, championing the brand.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, every now and again I do get an email of someone reaching out just to tell me that they really are enjoying their gloves. You know, every now and again, I do get these messages, and it just means so much. All in all, really positive response. I just can't believe it a lot of the time. They seem to be really well received.
So I haven't got this as a question, but we've talked about gloves. Are you branching out into other workwear, or are you just going to stick with gloves?
Yeah, I mean, the goal would be to have the full outfit eventually. Yeah, I'm really keen on working on really good, like, workwear trousers and shorts
as
well.
Oh, that would be amazing, yes.
No one's really needed to wear shorts this summer. It's been so cold. But the previous summer, I was really feeling like I would love some, you know, proper shorts to wear. But product development takes time, and it takes investment as well. So I am getting some help with that, and I'm hoping to be launching new products in the coming year.
Wonderful.
Eventually, just a full gardening outfit that's perfectly optimized for everything you need.
Not dungarees. Can't bear dungarees. Everybody thinks gardeners, women gardeners, should be in dungarees.
Yeah, I know, it's a stereotype.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I just look like a children's TV presenter.
So we're here at Glee. It's Tuesday, the first day of Glee in the afternoon. This is your first trip to Glee. So how are you finding it so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit overwhelming, but amazing. I've just been loving it today.
Good.
Yesterday was full on. Yesterday was one of the most physically and emotionally demanding days of my life. I arrived in the morning and my stuff wasn't there. Nothing had arrived. It then got sent to the wrong stand. And then there was a parcel missing. So I had to kind of run around and look for that. But it all came together in the end.
Not the best introduction.
It's okay. I mean, yeah, it just made for a longer day. I knew everything would be fine.
Yeah.
I never lost faith that anything would actually get lost. You know, I knew it was all going to be here somewhere.
Yeah,
so I wasn't too worried, but it just slowed me down. Just setting up all the furniture myself. It was a long day. We got out of here at just 10:15 PM.
That is a long day.
So it was a long day, but so worth it to be able to just be here and enjoy it today. And I'm just so grateful to be able to be here, because the business is only just over a year old. So for us to be here so early, it's just
that's really pretty good,
exciting.
Isn't it? That really is.
Very grateful.
We're a young podcast as well, so we're excited to be here as well.
Although not our first Glee.
Not our first Glee, but our first
podcast.
We've
been coming for a while.
First podcast at Glee.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So what was it that encouraged you to exhibit here?
Yeah, it was just, I have quite a few friends and contacts in the industry, and it was just, it was a name that kept up.
Right.
Kept on coming up. Yeah, again and again. And I think this does just, this seems to be the place where buyers come. And, being in our second year of business now, I feel it's the time to just try everything and try new things. But yeah, it was really just from everything that I've heard from people in the industry, this seemed to be the place to come.
Right.
So I thought we'd give it a go.
Yeah, brilliant.
And we're here.
So you said you have a friend that's helping you on the stand. So have you had a chance to have a wander around, and has anything caught your eye, or are you just mainly on your stand?
Yeah, I, you know, every time I try and leave the stand, that's when someone comes.
Someone comes.
I try and run back. But yeah, there's a few shows I would like to catch if possible. I definitely love to come and see your talk.
Oh no.
if I can. Michael Perry, Mr. Plankgeek as well. I'm a fan of his, and I met him at the Garden Press event earlier in the year. So yeah, definitely go and support him. And yeah, I mean, just wandering around and looking at the stands are so beautiful. Some of them are just huge, and there's obviously been so much thought and effort put into the stands. And yeah, it's just lovely to wander around and get inspiration from what everyone else is doing and discover new things. But yeah, I hope to have more of a look around in the next few days.
Brilliant.
So you said you got a photography background. Does that mean you've put a lot of thought into how your products are displayed and that sort of thing? Do you do merchandising in any way?
I try my best. I'm trying. This is it's been a sort of problem I've been trying to solve for the last few months, is how to get our products ready for retail, because they're really designed for sort of e-commerce. I don't know if you've seen our gloves come in a lovely sort of cotton bag, which is beautiful for e-commerce when they arrive in a box, but not so great for retail when you want to see the product. So it's trying to overcome that problem. And I've worked on new retail packaging. I'm really happy with it for now, and I think the displays look lovely. So, but it's all just a learning curve, something I'm learning and hopefully improving on. And it'll be great to get feedback from buyers as well that I meet here and see what they think of the packaging and see how I can improve it.
So will we be able to go into any garden centres soon to actually buy Feverfew, or is that not quite there yet, or is it all secret?
Oh, I hope so. Let's see after the next few days. I've got some very exciting meetings lined up tomorrow. So yeah, I hope so. That would be the dream.
Would
be the dream. So,
So maybe this fits in with our next question, or my next question, which is, what are you excited about for the business in the coming year?
Yeah, new product launches, I hope, in the next year. Focusing more on community and trying to give back to those community projects that we really care about. Just the growth of the business. I'm just really loving seeing it grow from nothing a year ago to now. So and just more shows, just getting the name out there. All of it. The whole thing's exciting.
Oh, it's amazing. So what is the one piece of advice you wish someone had given you before you started out, and that you could pass on to somebody trying to get a company or ideas off the ground, especially in a rural setting like you've got?
I think definitely if you're in a rural location, then you can use it to your advantage. Right. As I said before, there's much more support available.
In what way is that?
So
funding.
Funding and support. So in my first year of business, I was able to get on a program called the Impact 30 program. That's just for Highlands and Islands businesses. Okay. So I was teamed up with a mentor who is in a very similar industry, and he's sold a few companies and been very successful.
Oh,
so
goodness.
Having him by my side, basically, to call whenever I needed help, was like, I would not be here today if it hadn't been for him. So you never know what support is available there. And I know I do have friends that are in rural locations in England too, and they have said similar things, that they've had access to much more support. But yes, and just believing in yourself as well. Right, okay. You know, there's a lot of people when you start a new business, people kind of won't get it, or they'll just think, you know, that's random. Or you know, when I was explaining to people that I was going to start a gardening gloves business, I think a lot of people just did not understand. But you've just got to have the passion and drive to just go for it. Yeah. And don't second guess yourself too much. Sometimes got to try things.
Yeah.
We talked about your sister. How about the rest of your family? How have they taken to you setting up the business?
Yeah, they've been great. My other sister has been she was really good for looking after my online orders when I needed to have a quick little holiday. I actually live at home with my parents, and they've been great with being very understanding about the number of cardboard boxes everywhere. So the spare room is now my office, which is great. But then the boxes have started to spread throughout the house. So other rooms are starting to get filled with boxes. I'll have my own office one day, I'm sure. But yeah, they've been so supportive and understanding. So
that makes a big difference.
Grateful for that.
Can I ask a question that we haven't pre-prepared? But when it comes to the actual making of your gloves, a silly question. How have you got them to be specifically for women? Do you use hand models, or you use people who are, that's what they do, make women's clothes?
Men with ladies' hands.
The sampling process, I think I've got about 5 rounds of samples to begin with.
Right.
And I obviously work with a specialty manufacturer that specializes. They actually specialize in workwear gloves rather than gardening gloves, which is why I think they've been so successful, because they're built for sort of like mechanical gloves, so they're very hard wearing. I had about 5 rounds of samples to try and get the sizing perfect, because I really wanted it perfect. Mm-hmm. But what you'll generally find with women's gloves or women's hands is that they're sort of slightly thinner around the palm.
Mm-hmm.
And then slightly longer in the fingers, whereas men's are slightly wider around the palm and shorter in the fingers.
Right.
When I was doing market research for the gloves, I bought one of the most kind of highly recommended pairs of gloves.
Okay.
From doing my research, they seem to kind of be the best. Mm-hmm. So I spent a bit of money on them, and I bought them, and I've never once been able to wear them, because they're about a centimetre too short in the fingers.
Okay.
So they're just unwearable. So because they were unisex.
Right. Oh, it's fascinating. No, I've got to get myself a pair.
We can definitely arrange that.
I've got very silly little hands, and it's always been
about the same size as mine, actually. Yeah. You'll be an extra small.
Well, I think what has happened is, because years of wearing gloves that don't fit, and I've spoken to a lot of women who have the same things, is that you clench a lot more. So women are tending to get arthritis a lot earlier because of this kind of trying to grip onto tools with gloves that don't fit, or you stop wearing gloves and that, you know, buggers up your hands as well.
Yeah.
So having gloves that fit is, I mean, I know if you're not a, you know, it's not what you do, but it is so important. It really is.
But I think that's exactly why somebody like yourself needs to come in and say, no, we need to create this. Because actually, it's probably men who've been creating the products and developing and designing the products.
A bit like bras.
I wouldn't know.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, it's been really lovely chatting to you today, Rachel, and we wish you all the best success, and I'm really hoping that you'll get lots of buyers taking you up.
So.
But obviously, you don't want to go too bad, because products in demand. But hopefully, you know, brings you what you want and that you enjoy it. And I'm sure we will see you around the show.
Yeah, all the best.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thanks, Rachel.
And now for our conversation with Jennifer Susan from Halosphere.
Okay, so it's day 2 of Glee. And we're here this morning with Jennifer Susan, the founder and CEO of Halosphere. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. What a fantastic show.
Great.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? And Jennifer, I just wanted you to tell us right to begin with, so we can all understand what it is you do. So can you just tell us a bit about who you are and what Halosphere is?
Sure. So I am a garden lover. A plant lover, nature lover, and I pick a lot of wildflowers from my garden and from the hedgerows, and love arranging them. But I realised quite quickly that they don't last. You pop them in a vase, or the smallest you can find, and the next day they're gone. Okay. So I created myself a product for flower arranging. And it's called a halosphere.
Right.
And I came up with the name myself. Mm-hmm. And it arranges your flowers so beautifully. It's a ceramic disc and it fits on any vessel. So you can...
I've noticed that you've got a sample there. Can I just hold it up to the camera so people can actually see while you're talking?
Oh, right. I like that.
Okay, so here we go.
Great, thank you.
So I'm just going to explain, because obviously most of this is radio. So it's a round disc and it's got lots of different size holes. And this is fine bone china, am I right?
Is.
And it's very, very pretty. But I like all the different sizes. So it's kind of looks a bit like Edam cheese.
Yes. Yeah.
With a gold rim.
That's right. It's a simple tool to create your arrangements for you with ease. It's super sustainable because I didn't want to use foam. It's now pretty much been banned overnight. I wanted something I could wash and use again and again. So I created this product on my dining table for myself.
Right.
And that was 3.5 years ago. And my family started wanting to buy them, or my friends wanted starting to buy them. So it really did come from this organic need of mine to have flowers last longer. And it has just flourished into what it is today. And I spent 3 years making it myself in my tiny damp studio.
Oh, bless.
So I work by day, put the children to bed, and then go down and make my designs. So really a passion project, but they were just so well received at markets.
So when you say you made them yourself, are you an artist? Do you work with clay, or how did you do that?
I actually started when I created the product. So I've always been very artistic. My parents, I'm blessed to have had lots of music lessons.
Right.
So that's definitely something that was in my family history. Mm. And I recently found out that my great uncle worked for Wedgwood.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I didn't know.
There we go. So in the blood.
It made a lot of sense at those times at midnight, rolling clay, thinking, why do I love this so much? I can't quite put my finger on it. And then I found
now
out
you
that
know.
It's in my blood. And after selling for 3 years at craft markets and just having such success, I sold over 2,500 in person at events, artisan markets. I did
that is good.
A Bath and in Cirencester and in the Cotswolds. And everybody I met said, every market, somebody said, you should go on Dragon's Den. And after I'd heard this about 150 times, I thought, right, I'm going to launch this as
do
a company.
Yeah.
This
right.
is coming.
Okay.
And this year, I reached out to Duchess China 1888 in Stoke-on-Trent in the heart of the Potteries.
Yeah.
And it was a shot across the bow. It was a, this is me. This is my product. Here's my CAD design. Here's a picture of me in my studio. Here's my trademark and my limited company number. Would you like to create this product with me? And they called me pretty much straight away and said, we think you've got something really exciting.
And how long ago was this?
March.
So very recent. Oh, goodness, how exciting. So you've touched on it briefly. Can you just, because you're Jennifer Susan, so what's the meaning behind your name, the company name, Halosphere?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that. So I understand that there are products like this out there. They're called flower frogs.
Yes.
And I felt that just didn't describe my product. It's not a frog because it doesn't sit at the bottom of the pond, the glass. And people said to me, what are these called? So I thought, I need a name. Mm-hmm. And I really called this name in, and I thought about it for a long time. And Halosphere has its roots in Britain, but also in Greece. So Halle was the Greek goddess of water.
Right.
And in Old English, Halle means meadow.
Right.
So it means water meadow. And the idea is that you put the disc on your vase and you create a sphere and you're the artist. So I make the halosphere, but you create the art that is the sphere, the arrangement.
That is lovely. I love that. That's such a beautiful story.
You mentioned that one of the reasons why you created it was because the cut flowers didn't last that long. How does the halosphere actually make the cut flowers last longer?
That is such a great question. So, seeing as this began on my dining table, I have a good story for you. So I first poked holes in clay with my children's drinking straws. I popped forget-me-nots in, so forget-me-nots will forever be the start of this company. And they lived for 3 weeks, and buds that were closed when I picked them opened.
Okay.
And I've never seen a cut flower do that,
no.
Let alone a wildflower.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to my husband, look at this. This is magic. And he's a scientist, and he said, no, no, it's physics.
Oh, right.
And I said, no, 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 it's magic.
It's magic.
And 3 years later, we're still having that debate. But I actually did this school ink test where they make you put ink in the bottom of a chrysanthemum vase and watch it come up through the petals. Mm. And in the halosphere, the ink reached the petals much faster than without.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
So our theory is 90% magic, 10%. The stems are straight, so they can drink the water, they can take up the water. And they're also not overcrowded. Mm-hmm. So when you have your flowers standing up straight looking lovely, you need so many stems in order to create that round arrangement without foam or chicken wire or plastic that we use, or putting tape over the bowl. My husband was fed up of, like, why is there tape on all of our bowls? So this was really a problem solver. But my customers just understood it and love it and would say, oh, I'm going to get one for my mum, and then I'll get one for my sister, and I think I need one for myself. And it snowballed from there.
So it's a pretty high-end product, isn't it, that you've created? Have you seen like a need in the market for that, or a hole in the market, gap in the market for that?
Absolutely. You know, mentioned briefly there, you know, the current flower arranging tools that we have, I just didn't feel were right for my home. I've got young children, so I don't want the sharp chicken wire around.
Yeah, okay.
My husband's the cook, and he doesn't want tape all over the bowl. So all the kind of things that we've tried as a society to keep our flowers standing up. And as we know, foam is pretty much been banned overnight. I've had show florists reach out to me and say, what am I going to do? I've got a show in 2 weeks. And foam has been banned.
Sorry, can I just backtrack a little bit? So we're thinking of kind of Oasis, that's the brand name. But so florist foam, why? What's so bad about it? Why has it been banned kind of suddenly?
Sure. So the reason is it never biodegrades.
Right.
There are different grades of it. And there are some companies coming through with more sustainable versions.
Yeah.
But the current kind of the green one that you can buy, it will be here long after we are.
Right.
And that is, a lot of people are realizing that we just can't go on using it.
Yeah.
And in lots of industries as well. So events industries, weddings, funerals, you know, there's so much foam. And I see this product, it is luxury because it's fine bone china and it's 100% made in the UK. The clay's from Cornwall. I've been to the open mine and seen it being extracted.
Right.
I'm so passionate about British craftsmanship.
Right.
By day, I work in heritage.
Okay.
So I can see the fit with heritage action zones and the reinstatement of our British heritage. And that comes with a price point to make a successful company that serves everybody, that serves the master craftsman, that serves the people working so hard extracting the clay. It's a beautiful
process. I love this.
Process.
Yeah. And also, have you found that in recent years, the whole kind of flower farming, the British cut flowers has just taken off? You've had people like Sarah Raven have been a real champion. So do you feel that this is why now is the right time for you to launch your product?
Absolutely. Right place, right time. And I think it's really important that we support British.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I think, you know, for retailers that I've heard throughout my 3 years doing events is I want people to buy British cut flowers. They are more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got a halosphere, you know they'll last. So when I'm talking to florists, I'm talking to luxury retailers. It's about empowering people to actually buy British rather than imported. The flowers will last for longer, and they'll come back to you as a florist and as a flower grower.
Of course,
because they're using halosphere. So I see this. What I want to do is empower British business with this product, and they are luxury. This one that we've got here has hand-painted 22 karat gold.
Oh,
on
my
the rim.
Goodness! Oh, I see.
Every time I say that, I get a bit of a flutter because it really is a dream come true. And I do feel that they're, you know, they're heirloom pieces. Yeah. Fine bone china never,
no,
it very rarely breaks, and it's something that people can hand down.
And easy to clean?
Oh, it's so easy to clean, right, because what we've done is we've glazed both sides. And when I was making them myself, I wasn't able to do that because the way the kiln was. So okay. It's so exciting because you just take the flowers out, you get the green around where they've lived, mm-hmm, and you wash it. And you can use it again and again.
Again and again. And lovely gifts.
As, yes, you know, fantastic real gift.
Lovely gift.
You mentioned retail there. You're here at Glee. So I think this is your first visit to Glee. What brings you here, and what are you hoping to achieve?
Oh, that's a great question. So I decided in January to come to a, mm-hmm, show, and it was just in me. I was like, this is where I'm going to launch my company. It's going to be at a trade show. And as soon as I saw Glee, I thought, this is the place for me.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, listening to your previous episodes, everybody says it's like a big family. Everyone's so friendly, mm-hmm, and supportive. And I thought, yes, I have a lot of experience. Yes, I've got an incredible product. I've not done a show before.
Ah.
And, you know, it might have made, you know, there's all sorts of gifting shows, and there's like Autumn, yes, Fair and all different places. But Glee, yeah, was absolutely where I felt that I needed to launch. And I'm so glad I'm here. Because what a fantastic experience.
And how have people been receiving your product? How have you found that?
Oh, it's been so wonderful. The feedback I've had is these would be amazing in the wedding industry.
Right.
I can also, because we're made in Britain and Duchess China have their own print works, so we can print and decal or anything onto these, right, beautiful, amazing, items.
They're going to be real bespoke pieces.
And that's what's so exciting, because when I was looking at potentially going with China, the MOQ was something like 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're working towards more like 50 or 100.
Right.
So
right,
it's a flexible place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're made 45 minutes from where we're sitting now. And that's, yeah, very exciting to, yeah, be able to work with small up and coming brands as well as the large retailers. Mm-hmm. We are equipped for both of that. And I love that journey of building a community.
Definitely.
Great. Well, we'd like to wish you all the best. Absolutely. For the rest of the show. It's Wednesday morning. We're day two of Glee. So
yes,
got two more days to go. I really hope that it continues on that trajectory, and you get what you want out of it.
And looking forward to seeing the product in many more places.
Thank you so much.
And it does look lovely.
Yeah.
And I love your enthusiasm and your passion for what you do and for British made as well. So thank, yeah, you so,
yeah,
much.
Yeah. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And as promised, our conversation with Shona Young, the CEO of Nutseen Twine.
Hello, Shona.
Hi.
Hi there,
thank
Shona.
You. Thanks so much for taking the time. I know it's a busy, busy, busy day. Mm-hmm. And Shona is the CEO of Nutseen Twine. So, Shona, tell us about all your products.
Oh, all the products.
Well, what Nutseen make?
Well, Nutseen produce garden twine. We actually invented it.
Right. Okay. Oh, invented it.
We invented, okay, it. And when we used green twine around plants, it was not seen.
Yeah.
So we changed the name to Nutseen because that's what we patented.
Very clever.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now we're very much seen because we offer 23 colours of garden twine.
Mm. Yes, I use the orange.
Yeah, it's very popular. So the company's origins began in Dundee in 1922,
okay,
a spin-off of the jute industry.
Ah.
And Nutseen produced garden twine in natural and green.
Right.
But now we've got 23 colours of jute, very sustainable product, mm-hmm, very fashionable, ticks all the green credentials, and it's from plants for plants. So that's important.
Right. Yeah.
So whereabouts do you source the jute from?
Okay, so our jute comes from Bangladesh. Bangladesh, okay, grow the best quality jute in the, mm-hmm, world because they get so much rain. It's actually a really sustainable crop. It's a very fast-growing crop. It regenerates soil, so it can actually grow in wastelands,
okay,
and it actually regenerates the soil.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it actually takes more CO2 out of the atmosphere than trees.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's biodegradable. It's a natural fibre. It's got so many good and strong credentials. So the yarn we can't grow in this country, mind you, with the amount of rain we're getting these days. So it's produced by farmers, and these then sell to the mills in Bangladesh. Okay. So the mill that we work with, we've worked for 20 years, and I've gone out to Bangladesh to visit the mills, and they have very strong social responsibility. They have a school on site, they have hospital on site, they have dentists, they have a fish farm, they grow vegetables. It's all very good, and it's important for us to know the origins of our of our
The
materials that we use, and we're confident then when we're selling it to customers that we know its background and full.
So I understand there's quite an interesting manufacturing process involved. Is that right?
In the jute, it's retted, it's spun, goes through a number of processes before it's made into actual yarn. So we've gone through all the different processes. We've watched the yarn being produced in Bangladesh.
Right.
When we receive it to us, it is actually yarn. So we then wind it on our machines. Our machines were built, the winding machines were built in America in the early 1900s. And we have two machines that were built in Manchester in the early 1900s. Now, there are none working machines in existence now, apart from what we've got. The rest of them, I think, are museum pieces.
Oh, so
there were William Ayrton balling machines, and we run them in our factory every single day.
Wow. So the upkeep of those must be quite something.
They're very basic mechanical machines. They work with gears. They're all imperial measurements.
Right.
And we kind of like the sound of them. And I look at the winding machines, to me, remind me when my son was young and I used to read him Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah.
And the troublesome trucks. So the machines can be troublesome. They're like us, you know, they're maybe not ready to start in the morning. They need to be, you know, tempered. They need to be looked after.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but we love them, and we love the sound that they make. It's very much like a train running.
Okay.
And how does the dyeing process work? Are there natural dyes?
No, they're not natural dyes. They're reactive dyes. So that's what's used for yarn and textiles, and they all comply with REACH standards.
Okay. I suppose you can't really use natural dyes with an outdoor product, can you?
And the colours will fade in natural sunlight, but there's no UV inhibitors in them. There's no chemicals in them that stop that happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so how on earth did you become involved? Because obviously it's an old company. You're not that old.
No. Well, I, as I like to say to people, I started in that scene when I was 10. But I joined the company when I was 25.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to my first Glee when I was 26.
Oh, really? Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And the first thing that hit me when I went into work was the smell of the jute.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't from Dundee, and I didn't know what jute was.
No,
and there was a typewriter on my desk that, you know, I've still got now. I mean, it's so old,
right?
But it was just something about the company. It's almost like I'm not the founder, but I'm the finder keeper.
Right, okay. Oh, I see.
And it's something that got under my skin, and I am very protective of my brand, the company, and really wanted to build this brand. Mm-hmm. We used to make twine for everyone. We used to make twine for all the big companies, but it was in their label.
Okay. So you said that the company's over 100 years old, which is, you know, pretty impressive. Has the has any of the processes changed over those 100 years, do you think?
Well, we've got a wee bit computerised now.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. I think we like to be involved in production. We like to make things. I think too many people don't do that anymore, and I think for us it's important for our customers. They like the fact that we are UK produced product.
Yes,
right.
Our export market is very strong, so we do about 60% of our turnovers export.
Right.
Who's your biggest country that you export to?
Japan, USA, South Korea, all over Europe. All over the world, really. So Australia, New Zealand, Germany is a big... Germans love our products.
Yeah. And is the UK quite a big market?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That is the big market. Okay. Yeah. Oh.
So what's the... what sort of challenges have you had since since the B word in exporting? Has it been tricky, or has it not been too bad?
Initially tricky. I think we've... grasped it with open arms in terms of we've invested in software which enables us to produce all our documentation.
Okay.
And we work very closely with the haulage companies to make sure. And that they've kind of led our hand and helped us support mm-hmm. us through that. I think initially people were frightened, you know, other companies in Europe were frightened to import from the UK because of the difficulties, but we've made it fairly straightforward for them.
Yeah.
So that's worked for us.
So let's get on to Glee. We're here at Glee. Mm-hmm, it's the second day. Now, you said you came to Glee a long time ago. Has Nutscene always been showing at Glee, or is it relatively new?
We were under different ownership over the years.
Oh, okay.
So, but the transition in Glee, you know, what we've witnessed over the years from my first time that I got a flight down to Birmingham, which cost something like £400
right.
back
Goodness
in
me.
The day. Wow. And I think it was British Midlands you had to
was
fly.
Was that from
with.
Dundee?
That was from Edinburgh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was so expensive then to fly.
Goodness me.
And it was just a different world for me to come in and see this.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people that I've met over the years, be them competitors, suppliers, customers. I've seen a lot of people today that I haven't seen for a long time.
That's great.
Which is nice because we haven't been here since 2017.
Okay.
Okay, so it is your first show for a little while. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What was it that attracted you to come back?
I just the timing of the show I think for us is a better yes. I think it's difficult for small businesses to do shows because if you're on your own it's hard to try and cover all the bases. I've actually brought one of the directors out of retirement to come and help, so but she's enjoyed it. And I just felt ready, that the brand was ready to show itself again after an absence. And the response has been phenomenal.
Oh, that's great. I was going to ask
for
you.
For us, I think we've got a show-stopping stand. It's what we aim to do.
Of course.
You know, we've taken a fairly basic product and made it very desirable.
Yes.
And I think that's
absolutely
important.
Well, I think your colour palette really lends itself to that, doesn't it? And I've seen the stand, I was on the stand earlier, and it really does look quite stunning.
It's interesting, Phil, that a few years ago we were up for an exporters award in Dundee, and it was the Dundee Courier, which is a very famous newspaper. You know, Dundee is home of jute, jam and journalism.
Right.
So we were up against Glaxo for top exporter.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we went to those awards, and the judges came and scrutinised before the awards ceremony. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the judges saying to me, you know, how do you come up with the ideas for your product, for the colours? Mm-hmm. And I said to her jokingly, but I meant it, I watched a lot of episodes of Blue Peter when I was growing up. That's a fact.
Absolutely.
That's
I can
brilliant.
See that. Yeah.
I was also a punk rocker, and that influences me very much in a lot of the stuff
your visual.
That I do. Yeah. The colours and things.
The colours are just so bright and bold, not what you would traditionally associate with gardening.
No,
and that's what I think is, you know, really got everybody excited.
And do you know what it does as well? It makes people smile.
Yeah.
And we know that from Chelsea, because when our stand's ready at Chelsea and people come in, when they walk past, they stop and they smile. And a lot of people who stop here to look don't necessarily have any intention to come to us to buy product, but it's enough to stop them in their tracks and say, wow, what is this? I need this.
And they'll go and buy it in the garden centre.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not a buyer for here, they'll remember and they'll, I want some of that time.
Absolutely.
So have you had a chance to look around the rest of the show yet?
Yes, I have. And actually, because we, during COVID, we bought a shop and opened a huge shop in our hometown, which is called Nutscene & Co. And so there's a few of my suppliers here. So I wanted to speak to them and have a look at. So we're buying from other companies who are
lovely.
Here.
Oh, okay. And has anything special caught your eye that you might think about?
I like the Fever Few gloves because I've read about her. Mm-hmm. So I've gone there and had a chat. So we're going to stock those.
Oh, wonderful.
We like Seed Ball. We stock that. So there's a few of our suppliers here as well. So it's good. But the show seems to be I like all the little stands that they've got.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of people are happy with that because there's lots of new companies
here. There's lots of new companies.
We've just had Matt Meehan on, who's the show director.
Yeah.
And he was saying that 156 new businesses showing this year.
Yeah, that's a big number.
Yeah. I think it's people want to get back out there and look, touch, see.
Yeah.
They want to be involved in that. You know, we've had a long period. We've had a long period of no contact with the outside world.
Mm. Yeah.
And actually the networking that's going on is really interesting at the moment because we've been talking to two companies who are getting information from each other about possible distributors in the US and getting help, new businesses. And that's important as well, that networking.
Yeah, absolutely. We've said on this podcast, and lots of our guests have been saying that actually within the industry, there's a lot of collaboration between people. Mm-hmm. You know, networking is really tight. It's a very close-knit community within the industry, which is great to see.
And people tend to be really helpful as well and friendly.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
One thing which we've not asked you, which before we finish, and that is just whether you've brought any new products out. Which you're showcasing at Glean this year?
I think we've changed. We've increased our offer. So we've offered. Okay. We've got more colours to offer. We have changed packaging in a lot of our products as well to make them more appealing to consumers and a bit more information about our product. But I think again, it's important to get feedback from customers about things that you might consider doing.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people, our product can be quite hard to display in garden centres in particular, and they question, where does your product sit? Is it gift? Is it gardening? And I said, no, it's unique. So it requires to be at the till point. Obviously.
Of course.
It makes us think, right, okay, so how can we make this easier for customers to say, yes, I want this. I want this in stock. Send me this deal.
Yep.
But they can display it. You've got to make an impact with the display. That will be lost otherwise. Yeah. So
some merchandising theatre.
There's a learning thing going on as well, obviously. You know, you're getting feedback from customers and that's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have to say, thank you so much for coming to see us, Shona. I know it's been really busy and you managed to fit us in. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And just wish you all the best for the rest of the show.
Yeah, lovely. And beautiful product.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.